blood.
Hello and welcome back to another modernly gothic episode of the First Time Watchers podcast.
Because we like to watch.
My name is Tim Costa.
I'm Romano Da Silva.
This is Walter Vinci.
What we like to do on the FTW podcast is find a movie that none of us have seen, watch it together, and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all of our lists of shame. And if you would like to send feedback, remember to email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com. And stay tuned to the end of this episode for other ways to contact us and to find out what we'll be discussing next week. Speaking of feedback...
We love the feedback.
We put out a Twitter poll last week asking, what is your favorite movie that leaves the ending open-ended?
This was because of the movie we watched of... What the hell did we watch last
Fear
week?
X.
Fear X, that's right.
So, actually, this is surprising how many responses we got. Neil Ramji, at Neil Ramji, Blade Runner, failing that AI had an awesome open ending as well, eventually. Ryan Sarek, at The Reader Film, Memento or Baumbach's Kicking and Screaming. Now, with Memento, how really open-ended is that? Is it just because of the structure of it that you think it's open-ended? Or?
Well, I don't know. I don't want to say anything about the ending of Memento. From what I remember how it ends... It's kind of a twist ending, but I don't think it's... I don't know if I would count it as open-ended.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on how you took the movie, I guess. Like, I guess if it wasn't a satisfying conclusion or you felt like you needed to know more, I could see where someone would take it as it's open-ended.
Joshua Williams, at Joshua Williams 35, Drive. Aaron Moran, at... A.A. Moran 101, Half Nelson. I love how nothing is resolved how you would want it to, just like in life. Now, I've seen Half Nelson. I recommend both you guys watch it, and I somewhat agree with that. I had completely forgotten about how it ended, and that it is pretty good.
I mean, it's in the queue. It's just not at the top.
Saul Allerton, at Dr. Dojo, The Thing, there is sort of a closure to it, but it still raises enough questions to be open-ended in my eyes. I agree with that.
Well, that's what they base the sequel off of, is that ending.
No, because the sequel
is a prequel. It's a prequel, that's right. Never mind.
Yeah, stop talking about things you haven't seen well.
Go fuck yourself.
C.M. Gardner, at Juvenile Cinephile, Taxi Driver. That's another movie I have to revisit. It's been maybe 20 years since I've seen it. I gotta watch that again.
It's on my list of shame, actually, and it's sitting... in a Blu-ray case on my desk.
God damn it, Wally.
Just looking at me, saying, come on, watch me.
Kevin Dillon, at Small Screensaver, The Wrestler, such a great final shot. Now, The Wrestler, I think, can be interpreted as either it is open-ended or you kind of know what's happening right afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those movies that there's only two ways that could turn out, I guess.
Right, yeah. Cameron Carpenter, at Lumishan, Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King. I mean, there's so many endings there, but I mean, I don't know how...
I mean, if we're open-ended it is. That open-ended, like, you can almost consider any movie open-ended.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of closure to that movie.
Yeah.
Tim Bartlett, at WB Lost Soul, The Thing and Invasion of the Body Snatchers leave some ambiguity and glimmer of hope, but have strong sense of dread. Also, Gattaca is an excellent movie that leaves the audience with no idea what will happen to the main character.
Yeah, but in the terms of Gattaca, his whole purpose is to get on that ship.
Yeah. But does he end up on the ship by the end?
I don't want to spoil that.
Yeah. Cinephile, at Cinephile Blog, Five Easy Pieces. I'm not familiar with that movie at all.
I've never heard of it either.
I'm familiar with the title. I don't think I've seen it, though.
Maybe something to add to our list down the road?
Perhaps.
I think I actually responded to him asking if he would suggest it for us to watch if we've never watched it. He said he definitely recommended it. It's one of his favorite movies. Andrew Zachariasen, at Andy Zach. No Country for Old Men. Also, Inception. Ambiguous endings are my favorite. How could I forget Blade Runner, Final Cut? Is Deckard a replicant? Amazing ending. And Andy, at A. Stimpson 99, Another Earth. Now, Hermano has seen that. And,
yes.
And
you haven't seen it?
Oh, I have. Oh. I have. And that is a pretty good open-ended.
That's a very good open-ended, because it definitely, that's one of those movies where something happens and you definitely want to know more and the movie just ends.
Yeah.
It doesn't give you anything and leaves it all up to your imagination.
So yeah, but in a good way.
That's a good example.
Yeah, that's definitely a good example. Well, no, that's all the responses, and that was a lot of responses, so thank you all for responding. In this episode, we will be discussing Chan-Wook Park's American film, Stoker. But before we get into that, it is time for Yay or Nay. Yay! This is the part of the show where we discuss what we have seen recently on our own. I will go first, and I'm going to give you guys the option. Should I start with the bad and go to the good, or should I go from the good to the bad?
Let's go with the good to the bad.
Want to go with the good to the bad?
Okay. Logical progression.
Okay, so I will start off with the movie that came out this weekend, and that is Prisoners. Now, this isn't the best movie I saw this weekend. I'm just starting from the most recent. This is the movie that stars Hugh Jackman and Jake Gyllenhaal and Viola Davis and Melissa Leo and Maria Bello and Terrence Howard. It's directed by Denis Villeneuve, and this was a movie that I had trailer hitched a couple of weeks ago, and I had hitched to it, and I'm glad I did because this movie is pretty excellent. Even at 2.5 hours long, it does not feel like 2.5 hours. This is the story of when Keller Dover's daughter and her friend go missing, he takes matters into his own hands as the police pursue multiple leads and the pressure mounts. But just how far will this desperate father go to protect his family? And that's exactly not really what the question is, but the story is how far he does go. And it there's been a lot of talk, feedback regarding this film as to, you know, that it's morally ambiguous. And I don't think it's morally ambiguous at all. I think it wears its heart on its sleeve, and it knows exactly what the answer is from the protagonist's point of eye, and it's never a question as to where to go from here. It's only as the viewer are you like, well, I don't know if I would go this way, you know. But it's not the movie asking that at all. And there's barely ever any mention by the other characters in the movie questioning it. Jake Gyllenhaal in this movie is excellent as the cop, and overall all the performances are great in this movie because you get the sense that there is a definite backstory to these people, that they are well drawn out characters who have a story, have a history with one another, but it's not laid out for you in such plain speak, and it's so well done. I put this on a procedural level, almost on the same level as Zodiac. I think Zodiac is a slightly better film, but this movie isn't as deep or as layered as Zodiac. But it's in the same vein as the procedural type of Zodiac. But it only takes place over several days. It doesn't take place over years like Zodiac does.
Well, Zodiac's based off of real. Yeah.
Right. No, I understand that it's based off, but I'm just saying in the same vein. So
also starring Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yes. Like I said, Jake Gyllenhaal and Hugh Jackman is desperately seeking an Oscar with his performance. I don't think it's Oscar worthy. Maybe it's Oscar nomination worthy, but I don't know. He seems to have drawn a lot from his Wolverine days and channeling the rage and bringing it out in this movie. But yeah, and this is an ending. Talk about open endings. This is an ending where you could see it's open ended, and it definitely leaves it up to interpretation as to what happens afterwards. I'm not spoiling anything. Also, I did not recognize Melissa Leo until the final credits when the started rolling and her name came up. I'm like, holy shit, that was Melissa Leo. She is a fucking chameleon because I barely have recognized her in any of the recent movies since The Fighter. She was in Olympus Has Fallen as some like a Secretary of State or whatever, and I didn't recognize her until the end.
Yep.
And she's been in other films. I mean, she to me is getting as good as becoming a chameleon as Gary Oldman is.
She was in Red State too.
And an excellent role in Red State as well.
I don't want to burst your bubble, Tim, but she was in Oblivion, and I recognized her right away.
Oh, really? I have that in my queue coming up, so I'm pretty anxious to see that. So, obviously, I would give Prisoners a yay. And next, the best film I saw this weekend, and that was No Country for Old Men. Now,
I love this movie.
I have to talk about the first time I saw this movie back in probably 2008. Because this movie was released in 2007. I didn't see it until it was on a movie channel in 2008. Shortly after, or maybe even right after, right in the beginning of 2009, actually, shortly after I got my first HDTV. And I saw that one of the movie channels was playing it, and I started putting it on, and it was not in HD. So it was stretched out. This is before I started playing with all the settings and all the stuff, and it was stretched out, and my original viewing was hampered by not having full surround sound and not having a proper screen vision of it. So ever since the last time I saw it, I was like, well, you know, I really didn't remember that well. You know, I remembered parts of it. I remember a really good chase sequence, you know, or shootout, if you will.
Yep. Shotgun fight.
But I didn't remember everything. Yeah. I didn't remember how layered this film was. So a couple months ago, I bought it blind, essentially, on Blu-ray, because it was really cheap on Amazon. It was like $7.99 or something like that. And I finally got around to watching it. And, of course, this is a damn fine fucking good movie.
Yes, it is, sir.
Now, the thing is, another movie released in the same year, and that was also nominated for Best Picture, was There Will Be Blood. Now, I know Wally isn't as keen on There Will Be Blood as Hermano and I are. And Hermano and I think maybe it's even one of the best movies of the decade.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I believe that as well. And after watching No Country for Old Men, you know, it won the Oscar for Best Picture. And I'm still debating. I still think There Will Be Blood is a slightly better film than this movie. But I mean, that's no detriment to No Country for Old Men, because goddamn, this movie is so good. Javier Bardem as Anton Chigurh is like the embodiment of evil, of the devil, essentially. His performance is so frightening, and the way he goes about killing people, you can see that there's times when he gets more personal in his killings, that it becomes almost like a sexual game to him. It's like he becomes enthralled with it. His eyes roll up. He's almost like shark-like because of the way his eyes just roll up in his skull. The layers to this movie of just you know, I don't know, just it, there's just so much going on in this movie for me to even begin to explain in the short segment. But I mean, this movie is obviously, everybody who's seen this, they know this movie is great. So obviously this is a yay. Next, I will talk about a pretty good movie from 2012 called The Sessions. This is starring John Hawkes and Helen Hunt and William H. Macy. It's based on a true story. John Hawkes plays Mark O'Brien as a man in an iron lung who wishes to lose his virginity, and he contacts a professional sex surrogate with the help of his therapist and priest. William H. Macy does a good job as playing the priest, because Mark is a devout Catholic, and he wants to get the blessing of the priest, of his priest, before he goes and does this. I mean, he's like a 35 or upper 30s aged man who's a virgin, of course, and because of his, you know, disability. And Helen Hunt was nominated for a Best Supporting Actress role in this. Well, I mean, she bears it all. You know, I talked last week about Rosario Dawson bearing it all in Trance, but she, Helen Hunt, even bears it more so than her. And I don't know how award worthy her performance was. She didn't win the award, but John Hawkes, I don't think, was nominated, and he should have been, because he was great in this film. And especially as in his position, he's lying down essentially the whole time. So just the way he has to perform in his position, it's great. The movie overall, I think maybe it tries to get a little overly sentimental by the end, but I mean, nothing is not earned. Everything is pretty well earned. It does get a little emotional by the end, because you're invested in him and his and how he, you know, and his goals, of course, and you know, just the struggle that he has, and also how Helen Hunt's character, you know, is dealing with this on her own front. No, I mean, it's a good movie. I would recommend it. That's a yay. And finally, the worst movie I saw this weekend is actually a favorite of Wally's.
Oh, bring it on.
It's from 2008, stars Philip Seymour Hoffman, Samantha Morton, Michelle Williams, Catherine Keener. It is directed by Charlie Kaufman, and it is Schenectady, New York.
And you, sir, are wrong.
No, I am not wrong. This movie is not really good at all. It's an amazing waste of talent. Charlie Kaufman is better known as writing such movies as, let's see here, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, Adaptation, and Being John Malkovich. all of which are pretty decent movies, to great movies. But the thing is that he did not direct those movies. He directed this movie, and he is unchained. He had this is a yes movie, a yes sir movie to the nth degree, in which nobody said, "Wait a minute, why don't you rein it back a little, Charlie? Why don't you take a step back and say, does this really work?" Because there is no connection to any of the characters, in my opinion. I mean, it's a cool idea. Of course, all of his movies have cool ideas. It's a cool idea that he essentially has his crew build this immense soundstage, a replication of Manhattan. But it doesn't really serve any purpose except for the theme of obsession and regret. And that theme is hammered on the head over and over and over again that I was like, let's move on. Show me something different. Show me something different. I mean, Philip Seymour Hoffman did a fine job, but everybody else is just wasted in this movie. I just could not connect to this movie at all. I got it in the mail, and I'm like, hey, this is Wally has recommended a movie that is kind of off the grid of his normal recommendations, and I'm like, as I'm watching it, I'm like, what is this? Like, there's so much stuff in this movie, like the house that she buys that's on fire. What is the point of that? What does that represent, Wally?
I have to go back and rewatch the movie. I haven't seen it in a bit.
Yeah. Well, that just didn't work for me. There's things in here that just, you know, just things that are focused on that I just could not connect to. So I don't know. I have to give it an A. Sorry, Wally.
Oh, Tim, you disappoint me.
And we'll go to Wally for his year and A.
All right. First of all, I'll talk about this movie that I saw that was originally on our list of a movie we were going to review. But due to the fact it's only available on DVD, and there's, for some reason, an incredibly long wait on this, it's a movie, Heartache. And this movie was waste my fucking time. It starts off with such promise. But these characters, the characters outside of... what's the actor that plays Sydney in this?
I haven't seen it. I don't know.
I can't think of the actor's name. He's well-known. He's a well-known character actor. His name is escaping me at the moment.
Hang on a second. I'm pulling it up right now.
What's the movie about?
All right, the movie's about... you see... John C. Reilly sitting outside of a convenience store, and this man named Sydney walks up to him and offers him...
Played by Philip Baker Hall.
Philip Baker Hall walks up and says, I want to buy you a cup of coffee and a cigarette. You know, I'll buy you a cup of coffee and I'll give you a cigarette. And they're sitting there talking, and he's asking him, like, you know, how he ended up where he was, and he basically tells him he gambled everything to try to get $6,000 for his mother's funeral. So he takes him to... a Vegas casino and shows him how to get comped, basically just walking back and forth, you know, cashing in chips, you know, getting chips so it looks like you're, you know, spending big. Eventually you'll get something for free. So he shows him this, and then at one point he meets Gwyneth Paltrow, who's a cocktail waitress, and the story moves from there. And at one point Samuel L. Jackson shows up, obviously playing like this, like, kind of supposed to be a dark element, like, stay away from this guy kind of person. The only person who's acting in this movie are Samuel L. Jackson and the guy who plays Sydney. They're the only two. John C. Reilly is absolutely... I wanted to punch him in the face.
Why?
Because he sounds like a whiny kid every single scene he's in. Why? No, but I love her. I married her today. It's awful. And like these characters are retarded in just like their mission. There's a scene where there's a man chained to a bed, face down. He's covered in blood because Gwyneth Paltrow's not only a waitress, but she's also an escort, and he won't pay her. So they chain to this bed. They beat the fuck out of him, and they were like, well, let's just get out of here. He won't remember us. He's not going to tell anybody. I'm not leaving until I get my money. And they're just... It is the longest, most just... I'm like, get the fuck on with this scene.
How many Paul Thomas Anderson movies have you seen?
What else has he done?
Well, you haven't seen Boogie Nights. Have you seen Magnolia?
Nope.
Oh, jeez.
We've seen There Will Be Blood.
I've seen There Will Be Blood.
Yeah.
The Master.
I'm not seeing the Master. I won't see that. I probably won't ever see the Master.
Punch Drunk Love?
Nope. Wow. Oh, wait, Punch Drunk Love. That's one with Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
Yes.
What did you think of that one?
Again, not impressed.
Maybe his style just isn't your type. You know, I still think you should see Boogie Nights.
It's in my queue, because it's on my list of shame, and I got to watch it because of the list.
I think that's probably the most accessible one.
Yeah, I agree.
You could get into and still come away actually liking the movie.
I mean, because he's 0 for 2 so far with me so far, so I can't. It's a nay on Hard Eight. It's not even a long movie. It's like an hour and a half, just over an hour and a half, and it feels like it takes forever to get to the fucking point.
And you had another movie?
Watch another movie. I found a treasure. In the used bin at Newbury Comics, I found a collection of 5 Alfred Hitchcock movies on Blu-ray for like less than $40. So it's got The Birds, Psycho, Rear Window, Vertigo, and what I watched before the show, North by Northwest.
It sounds like a pretty good mix.
It is a pretty good mix, and for less than $40 on Blu-ray, it's a friggin' bargain. I liked this movie.
Is this the first time you've seen it?
I haven't seen it in a while. So it's the first time in a long time I've seen it. Looking at it in one set of eyes, I remember I pretty much love all of Alfred Hitchcock stuff. So it's really hard for me to find a movie that I don't like. But I have a certain issue with this movie, and it didn't hit me since I started until recently when I've started writing and directing, movies and stuff like that. That whole crop duster scene it doesn't need to be in the movie. You could cut that entire scene out and still have the same film. There's no point or no reason for this movie that scene to be in here, and it was driving me nuts watching this. I'm like, why would you set this guy up in the middle of? Well, you could easily set him up somewhere else if you wanted to kill him or off him. You're in Chicago. There's tons of seedy places you could have sent him to get offed.
So you think it's just essentially written in there for the purpose of filming it?
Yeah, that's what I think. I think somebody's like, oh, I've got a crop duster. Well, we'll find a way to, kind of shoehorn that in. Because even when that scene resolves, it resolves with the crop duster flying headlong into a gasoline truck and exploding. It doesn't do anything to move the story. In fact, it actually stalls a pretty interesting storyline out, because that entire scene is just Cary Grant waiting. He's just standing there, doing nothing, watching cars go by.
Interesting.
But overall, this is still, it's Alfred Hitchcock. It's going to be a yay for me, regardless. That's my only one, gripe about the movie. It's still fantastic. It's still Cary Grant, who's just phenomenal. And it's by one of the master directors ever. So, yeah, it's a yay.
Hermano?
I have a little bit of a theme. I know Tim likes themes. My theme is going to be comic book adaptations. First, I watched...
Well, wait a minute. Where do you get across that I like themes?
You're always doing themes.
How so?
I just assume you're a fan of themes.
Okay. I'd like some...
Am I wrong to assume
I'd like some research on this, please.
You're always doing themes. Anyway. So first, not a movie. I watched the first episode / pilot for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Premiered just yesterday. Gotta admit, was not a big fan.
Well, it seemed like a lot of people on Twitter were fans.
Yeah, I've been hearing nothing but good things about it, but I felt really underwhelmed. But it wasn't much of a surprise to me, because I'm not a huge fan of Joss Whedon's style of writing, or his style of comedy, I guess.
That's right.
The way he injects comedy, everything's like a one-liner. Everything's like very dryly.
But
like,
you still haven't seen Firefly, right?
I have seen bits and pieces. I've never seen it completely.
Firefly is delicious.
Yeah, I don't think... Based on his style of writing for the Avengers and maybe some other stuff you're talking about, I don't think that the humor gets in the way in Firefly.
No, it doesn't. I mean, there's some funny stuff I swear by my pretty little bonnet, I will end you.
There's
stuff that happens over the series.
That stuff really just rubs me the wrong way. I just think it just seems so cheap, and he's aiming for the cheap seats every single time every time I just see one of his lines recited, I'm just like, oh, that just so stinks of him. It's so saturated in Joss Whedon's style of writing. I mean, I know he has a huge fan base and stuff like that. I give everything he does a chance, because I feel like sometimes there's something wrong with me personally, because why do I not like any of the stuff and everyone seems to love this?
Well, you don't like comedies, essentially. You don't like many comedies.
No, I do like comedies. It's just I don't like really blunt, in-your-face, so obvious comedies. Like, I like to be surprised. Yeah. I don't like the cheap seat type of comedy. Like, I don't know. Like, I was watching it, I kind of got like, this just seems like it's Heroes again. Like, it, and I felt like a lot of it was very much like fan service. Like, I felt like I was being elbowed in the ribs. Like, hey, did you get that reference? They just said Scarlett Johansson's character. Did you get that? Like, I was just like, fuck off,
but,
man.
So it felt out of place when they mentioned those names?
No, I just felt like they were just, like, throwing it out there just to be like, hey, we just mentioned something from Avengers. Did you hear that?
So
like, for the fans, pretty much.
It didn't flow with the story that it was telling.
Nah, I think they went out of their way to kind of make it seem like they weren't really trying to mention it, because they never say the Incredible Hulk. They say Green Monster or something like that, or they'll say a billionaire in a suit, like a robot suit or some shit. Like, they never say Iron Man, they never say Captain America, they say a hero from the 40s. You know what I mean? Like, they go out of their way to not say stuff but also mention it at the same time. So it seems just really like, hey, we're trying not to be too obvious, like Captain America, Thor. They do mention Thor briefly, that's it. They're like a god, and then someone says, well, he's not really a god, and like, I've been next to his arms, he's a god, you know, and like that's the type of comedy. See, Wally likes it, he laughs, but I hear that and I'm like, fuck off. Like, I'm just like, this is so dumb. But I don't think it was terrible. I think definitely I can see why people like it. If they're a fan of, like, you know, like anything else that Joss Whedon's ever done, you're gonna love this, because it really just seems like everything else that I've given a chance and just not really been a fan of.
Do they sufficiently explain the return of Agent Coulson?
There's a throwaway line to what may be going on. I think kind of Wally mentioned
LMD.
Perhaps. I mean, they don't specifically say that, but me and I both agree that that's probably what it is.
Right on.
I won't spoil it for people that don't know what LMD is, but overall, I'm kind of meh on it. I'll give it another chance because it is the pilot. Sometimes shows do get better with age, so I'm not going to just totally be like, no, this sucks, I'm not going to watch it again. I will give it another chance. I'll watch it a few more times. If I feel like it's not getting better, I'll probably just give up on it. So that's a meh for now. And finally, I saw...
Finally? There's only two?
Only two. I didn't have a ton of time.
I don't think two can count as a theme. I think you have to have more than two for a theme.
I think two is sufficient for a theme.
Mm-hmm.
I watched a movie that I was anticipating. Not highly anticipating, but I was anticipating it. And I got to see Kick-Ass 2.
Oh, why?
I was a fan of the first one. I really genuinely enjoy the first one.
First one is good.
Yeah. Did you not like the first one, Tim?
Yeah, I thought it was okay. It's been a while since I've seen it, but I heard a lot of really bad things about the second one.
All right. So the plot outline. The costumed high school hero Kick-Ass joins with a group of normal citizens who have been inspired to fight crime in costume. Meanwhile, the Red Mist plots an act of revenge that will affect everyone Kick-Ass knows.
Well, first of all, I'm really surprised that out of 44,000 users on IMDb, 7.1.
Yeah, look at the Metascore though, 41.
Yeah.
I'm more on that end because I really genuinely enjoyed the first one. I thought it was fun. I thought it was different enough from all these other hero movies or comic book adaptations that take themselves too seriously. So I thought it was like refreshing to see like a movie like that. And there were a few that came out, like Super and stuff like that. I enjoyed those movies.
You enjoyed Super?
I did.
I'm sorry.
On a certain level. This movie, however, from the opening act I was in, I thought it was a good callback to something that happened in the first one. But the more I watched this movie, the more disappointed I got in it. I thought they lost the tone of the first one. They lost that fun aspect to the movie. Like, it kind of tried to get really serious. And this movie does not belong in a movie wrapped up in a serious like tone.
How did you watch this? Because did you watch it on demand or is it out on DVD already?
I'm not at liberty to reveal how I've seen this. Anyway,
let's just say that you've seen it.
Let's just say that my eyes viewed it. Anyways, so my other problem with the movie is two things. Seeing the trailer for this movie, they really featured Jim Carrey a lot. He's not in the movie that much. I mean,
would he have been a big draw to you anyways?
I wish there was a lot more of him in it because he was my favorite part of the movie. I think he could have potentially brought this movie up a little bit more if he was in it more. Also, one of my favorite parts from the first movie was Hit Girl. Girl's in the movie. She's not Hit Girl for a large majority of the movie.
Well, that's
it's one of these like crisis of conscience where she's like, well, I made a promise to my stepfather or whatever that I wouldn't become Hit Girl anymore because it's dangerous. He cares about me, blah, blah, blah. Kick-Ass kind of goes through a crisis of conscience too. The Red Mist character played by Christopher Mintz-Plasse or whatever.
Platts.
He's awful in this movie. Like he had like sort of a minor role or a subdued role in the first one. In this one, he's up front and so over the top.
Well, he may have even been the weakest part of the first one.
I didn't think he was that bad. I mean, he just played like a kind of like a neurotic kid for the most part until the end. In this one, he's really over the top and trying to play like a badass and always trying to prove himself. He just comes off as so over the top. I mean, if everyone else was at that level, I could see it being kind of like a campy movie, but he's the only one that's that over the top. And he really stands out, and it just seems kind of bad. But overall, I can't recommend this movie. I just thought it did not have the fun of the first one. It took itself too seriously. It just became another one of those movies that the elements that are in this movie just can't be taken seriously. You know what I mean? It's just hard to take some of the stuff that happens in this movie. There are a few fun moments. Jim Carrey is, for the time he spends in the movie, he's pretty good. But everyone else was just kind of not the same as they were in the first movie. So I'm going to say nay on it. That's all.
I just want to take this time to mention that we now have a YouTube page.
YouTube?
Yes, YouTube.
Is that
YouTube
similar to a fallopian tube?
Not even close.
Is it the tube that things go down when things go down the tubes?
So we have a little bit of content now, and we'll be adding content very soon.
It's like macaroni? That's kind of shaped like a tube.
So if you visit youtube.com/1sttimewatchers, you'll be able to see behind-the-show content, in-show content, and maybe some extras that each of us would like to share. I don't know if there's any things you guys have in the pipeline.
Let's see. We uploaded a scene of Taken starring Tim.
Well, and Tooken.
Tooken starring Tim. And puppet me. There'll be more goodies like that to come.
So once again, that is youtube.com/1sttimewatchers. Just another way to enjoy the show. All right, now it's time for Trailer Hitches. This is the part of the show that gives us an opportunity to mention a trailer that either gets us on board for an upcoming movie or makes us want to bitch. I will go first. I will talk about a certain October release of this year movie starring Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger and 50 Cent. It's called Escape Plan. which is really, well, first off, on IMDb, there's already a rating out of 1,300 users of 7.7. The movie hasn't even been released yet. It's about 3 weeks until the movie comes out. The
movie's being pirated alive and well, apparently. Yeah,
I guess so. Maybe people are just so insane about the trailer. Almost like I was. Because I swear to God, as the trailer is going on, I'm laughing and laughing more. And I'm like... And then about maybe a little bit more than halfway, Arnold Schwarzenegger finally shows up in the trailer. And I'm like, oh my God, this is like the best thing ever. this movie looks so effing ridiculous, but entertaining. It looks so entertaining.
So it's like the Expendables in prison?
Yeah, who knows, man. But, so the plot is when a structural security authority finds himself incarcerated in a prison he designed, he has to put his skills to escape and find out who framed him. So the way it's set up is that... he's escaping from these prisons and like the heads of the prisons are putting him in charge to see how long it takes to escape. And it's just showing, his various plans and how he's doing it. And then it shows him taking another job for a new prison. And then all of a sudden he's double crossed and he's in this new super high tech security, glass enclosed.
Like somebody you keep a Marvel villain in.
Oh yeah. Or a Magneto,
Yeah, exactly.
Or like a lot of Magnetos. and the set design on it looks completely ridiculous and it looks like it makes no sense whatsoever. But it's just as it goes along, you can tell that it looks like a complete yarn, that they know what kind of movie they're in and that it's just, it looks like a lot of fun to me. I mean, I don't expect it to be great. I just expect it to be, kind of disposable fun. So I am, I actually have to tentatively hitch to this trailer. Hermato shaking his head.
This looks sort of like something that would have been amazing if it came out in their prime.
Oh, this, yeah, that's right. That's exactly what I thought. I was like, this is the movie. This looks like a total 80s throwback.
Yeah, you know, I'll agree to that.
And it looks like that's what they're playing it as. And I can't hold them against it.
I also got a little bit of a Lockup vibe, that Sylvester Stallone movie. Like, I was like, oh, this seems very familiar to Lockup.
I thought you meant Lockout, Space Jail.
Oh, no.
Well, that too, actually.
The other Lockup movie with Sylvester Stallone and Donald Sutherland. I don't know, just watching it, I'm like, man, why couldn't they get together in their primes? Because they look so old in this trailer.
Well, their egos were too big in their primes that they couldn't.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
No screen could hold their egos.
This is a movie I think I would have loved in the 90s, but now like I'm like, eh.
Well, you don't know how to have fun.
Whatever.
Speaking of not knowing how to have fun, Walter.
What?
Burn.
I have tons of fun. At your expense, usually.
That's true.
I'm going to talk about a movie that, after seeing it, letting it marinate, it's movies like this that kind of irritate me. It's a movie called Zero Charisma. It starts off with like this this soliloquy about how like back when old days, people sat around the fire and told stories. Then it cuts to a bunch of like grown men playing Dungeons and Dragons, and one guy decides, they have an opening in the group, so they bring in this new guy, and he's very charismatic, and it pisses off the dungeon master, and now like they're nemesis, they're now nemeses, in this world. Now, caveat: I still play Dungeons and Dragons, and I know a lot of people who play Dungeons and Dragons. Like, I would even say like professionally, if there was a professional Dungeons and Dragons league, like these people would be like the Tom Brady of like pro D&D, and no one I know acts anything remotely close to this. I know that in real life I tend to be that, the guy who gets brought in, the guy who does things outside of like gaming, that brings like, you know, tales of wonder from like, you know, going kayaking or things like that. And I know that a couple of times my friends who do play D&D have been like, we're trying a game, do you mind? I'm like, I haven't seen you guys in like a couple of weeks, like, seriously, really? We're going to hold this against me? I mean, I've seen people kick their own wives out of the living room to go so that they wouldn't distract them while they're gaming. But even then, like, no one really acts like the people that they do in this movie. Like, no one I know, I mean, they take it seriously when they're there, but it's like these people live this life 24/7. Like, everything is...
You mean in the movie?
Yeah, in the movie. Oh. And it looks like their entire life revolves around this.
You don't think there's people like that?
They're probably, but I think they're a real, real, real minority.
So you think this is just an exaggeration,
like a gross exaggeration,
or
kind
a bad
like,
representation of?
Yeah. Kind of like both, kind of like the first season of The Big Bang Theory. Like, no one talks like that, you know. So I mean, it's a tentative pitch because like some of the scenes that I've seen that I saw in the trailer actually look pretty damn hilarious. Like where he's talking to, I don't recognize the person, but I know they're big in the gaming field, and the guy says, "Well, after all, it's just a game." And then the other's like, well, how can you say that? You know? So I know these people out there do exist, but, I mean, not in my circle. It's a tentative hitch because I'm probably going to 06 it. It actually does look pretty damn funny.
I actually have a question. I know you say you played D&D. I never have. So do people actually bring their own figurines?
Sometimes.
I've never seen that. Every time I've seen D&D, it's always pen and paper.
One of the guys I used to play with actually buys, like, modular castle pieces that you can like build like an entire city like on a table.
Wow.
Some of the stuff can get real elaborate and like real expensive. Like I remember going to a store with a couple of friends of mine, and they bought like $300 worth of like just miniature pieces for their D&D game.
Ouch.
So wow. It can get up there. I'm hitching to it because I'm gonna go see it anyway. It looks funny to me. I would love to go see it with the role-playing group that I know, because I want to see how they react to it while I'm sitting like next to them. That would be awesome.
Interesting. Hermano?
The trailer I want to talk about is for a little movie called Need for Speed, starring Aaron Paul and Dominic Cooper, directed by...
And Dakota Johnson. The next Alexandria Steele? Is that who it is from the 50 Shades of Grey?
I have no idea.
I'm not a woman, so I don't know.
I don't know. I just remember her being.
I listened to those discs on the way up to Canada because I had nothing else better to do. But
sure.
No, right. Seriously, this movie. Anyway, back to Carmine. Don't get me started on this.
Directed by Scott Waugh. I think that's how you say his last name. W A U G H.
Waugh.
One half of the directing duo for one of Wally's favorite movies, Act of Valor.
Oh Jesus.
I kind of dug that movie.
Oh, it was you. I was pointing at Wally.
It was me.
I did see Act of Valor.
I thought you liked it. You didn't like it?
I liked parts of it.
Okay.
It was just an advertisement for the Navy SEALs.
Yeah, it's pretty much.
Okay. This trailer, not a story trailer. Basically, the entire trailer has Aaron Paul reciting like a poem over some scenes of some action and some cars driving really fast. I couldn't get a good sense for overall what I.
Is this based on the video game?
Yes.
All right.
I should have said that. Yeah, it's based on the video game of the same name. I think for some people it'll scratch that Fast and Furious itch. If you're waiting for Fast 7, if this comes out before that.
Yeah, it comes out in March.
Yeah, this might, scratch that itch for you, until Fast 7 comes out. Overall, I think it looks pretty good. I mean, it looks like it's shot competently. Oh, it's
pretty slick looking.
Yeah, it looks actually more cinematic than Fast and Furious does. Mm. Tonally, it looks a little more serious than Fast and Furious. Aaron Paul, I don't know. Obviously, I've never seen Breaking Bad.
I think he's really cashing in on his post Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
And rightfully so.
I don't know if he looks right for I don't know what type of character he's supposed to be playing, but right. He looks a little diminutive for this role that he's supposed to be playing. He looks like he's supposed to be playing like a badass race car driver or whatever. And he just looks kind of small and not imposing at all. So, I mean, I could see where Vin Diesel can pull off that role. He looks...
Well, it's funny, too, because in Breaking Bad, he's played like a small dog with a big bark, and no bite. So seeing him in this, in which he actually may... be able to back himself up.
Yeah.
It might be a little, not off-putting, but just he's this, I think a lot of people are going to go see this knowing him from Breaking Bad and are going to be like kind of expecting the same type of character. And I think that, I don't know if they'll be disappointed. I think they'll just might be surprised.
Yeah. I don't know. Sometimes things like that, like characters that don't fit the role they're meant to be playing, like that can really turn me off from a movie. So.
Well, he did play kind of a psycho guy in it was a remake horror movie, the Last House on the Left. Is that the one? Damn it. Sorry.
I'm not sure. Overall, I'm tentatively hitching. I think I saw enough good visuals.
Yeah, it was The Last House on the Left.
Yeah.
Oh, man. He was in Mission Impossible 3? I don't even remember.
Aaron Paul?
Yeah.
I don't remember that either. Wow. Did he just, walk by the camera at one point? anyways, it's a tentative hitch. I saw enough visuals that looked interesting. I don't know what the poem's all about. I thought it actually came off a little corny being overlaid over the trailer. Once maybe a story trailer comes out, I'll get a better sense of the movie, but I'll tentatively hitch for now.
Wally, guess what?
What?
We have merchandise available for purchase now.
Fucking A.
Hell yeah. Yeah, you can get t-shirts and more if you visit Zazzle.com/first-time-watchers.
We have a new logo, so there's going to be new stuff coming out.
Ooh, yeah. In the future, you'll be able to purchase just about anything with our logo on it. So please show your support for the show by visiting Zazzle.com/first-time-watchers and find an item that you'll be proud to wear.
And I should also point out that 100% of these proceeds actually go to making the show better. We're not going to be pocketing anything that's sort of making any sort of crazy profit. We're going to be using it to hopefully buy a better domain, better web space, better equipment, good stuff to make the show better for you. For you, the people.
Once again, that is Zazzle.com/first-time-watchers. Okay, let's talk about Stoker.
I've often wondered why it is we have children. The conclusion I've come to is we want someone to get it right this time.
The plot. After India's father dies, her uncle Charlie, who she never knew existed, comes to live with her and her unstable mother. She comes to suspect this mysterious, charming man has ulterior motives and becomes increasingly infatuated with him. The director, Chan-Wook Park. The actors, Mia Wasikowska, Nicole Kidman, and Matthew Good. Walter.
Yo.
When Asian directors have made their jump to the U.S. studio system, we tend to see some varying degrees of success. Examples, John Woo, Ang Lee, Justin Lin, and Tarsem Singh. What do you think of Park's first foray into the Hollywood market?
Well, this movie was actually recommended to us by a friend of the show. She's actually been part of our crew for the last 48 Hour Film Project, Bethany Whitehead. She was our script supervisor and Blood Bitch, and she gave this movie. She's like, "You guys should really watch this." So I was like, "All right." So I got, you know, we put it in the list and put it up for review. I'm watching this, and I just couldn't help, like, even if you didn't tell me that it was Chan-Wook Park directing this, I would have told you that some Asian director is directing this movie. Like, I'm sitting there going, this is an Asian movie with just done in America. And I'm sitting there going, all right, Chan-Wook Park, I'm like, this looks really, oh my, this really looks Old Boy. This looks like Old Boy very much. He's got a very distinct style that you can pick out of a crowd very easily. And it's one of those movies that I wish this movie was one of those movies that was actually made for a Korean audience, and, you know, got word over here about it in the States. Like, you honestly think
it would have been different?
I think my reaction to it would have been far different.
Why?
Because I did not like this movie.
Really?
No.
So what do you think was different about his style in for the U.S.?
Well, I like his style. I like his odd use of camera placement. But it's one of those that I kind of wish, like, rather than just be the director, I wish he had more of a, involvement in the story, like Old Boy and things like that. Like, because even then, like his Vengeance trilogy, I don't really like any of those movies either. Like, I absolutely hate Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance. I can't stand that movie. Lady Vengeance would probably be the next step up from that, like being slightly better, and then slightly better than that would be Old Boy.
That's interesting. So the writer of this is Wentworth Miller, and this is the only thing he's written. He's an actor. He's been in House. He's been in Resident Evil Afterlife, Prison Break.
Prison Break.
Blood Creek. A voice in Family Guy. Ghost Whisperer. This is interesting. I didn't know that. I didn't know this until now, that this is his first writing job.
And it shows, because he tries to throw like all these like just weird things in there, just for the sake of being weird.
So you don't think that Chan-Wook Park had enough say in the final the writing or the story as it was going along?
No, I think he was handed this. I have a feeling he was handed the script and basically told, like, he, you know, looked it over and basically decided to shoot it as best he could, because this story aims to be weird. It aims to be not like organically weird. Like, this is something's really strange. This is like weird for being weird's sake. Like,
interesting.
Let's be edgy. We can talk about more of the things we'll talk about in spoilers that I'll mention. That just like, I'm like, really, like.
Well, I think his style suits the story itself.
Yes, any other director, I don't think this movie would have been even worse.
See, I think this is some of the best. It really has amazing production quality and set design.
Yes,
it's a very, like I said in the opening, it's very gothic, modernly gothic, and it's, it has a great colored palette to it.
Yes.
You know, and he frames it very, very well.
Yeah.
However,
anything away from his directing ability.
I'll say that the editing isn't top notch.
No. Not
with flashback or flash forward scenes, but, well, not just flashback scenes, but I'll say that the editing within separate scenes themselves is a little jarring at times. Especially when there's like more than two characters in one scene.
Yes.
And it doesn't happen that often, but when there are, you really get an odd sense of placement. because of the cuts that they make. And I don't think that some of those cuts were necessary, and it really detracted from my enjoyment. But I'll say it's some of the best sound design I've heard.
Yes, I was going to talk about that later.
The music,
when it came up.
The music and the sound effects and just the overall design of the sound I thought was tremendous. And like I said in the past, I'm fortunate to have a nice surround sound system, so I was really able to absorb that and gather it. There's some imagery in here that I don't know if it's either doesn't make any sense or if it's too on the nose. Like the imagery of the spider at two separate points in the film.
Yep.
I don't know if it's supposed to represent something or if it just doesn't make any sense.
Well, like think about it, Chan-wook Park in Old Boy has ants crawling on him. Yeah, I mean that's one of the things I'm like that's his fingerprint like right there like that the weird thing with the insects.
But. So this is all about like a sexual awakening of Mia Wasikowska's character, and it's awakened when her uncle comes to visit after her father dies. And to me, I think it would have been more impactful if you had a sense of what her life or was like, or it, what her maybe inner turmoil was like before the events of her father dying. So you could get a sense of that there was something brooding, that there was something underneath ready to come out of her that you saw come out of her during this film. But I just think that since you don't have enough of that background, and you don't need to explain it, over-explain it, you don't need to give me volumes of papers detailing everything that has happened to her in her life. You just need to give me a little bit more of her backstory for me to be able to appreciate this awakening within her, as a sexual and otherwise. That we'll get into spoilers. But also, Matthew Good plays her uncle, doing the best Anthony Perkins from Psycho impression. Just these dead eyes and this creepy smile. Almost he's almost dressed and has the same exact haircut as Norman Bates. Obviously there's a nod to some Hitchcock in this movie. But I mean, overall, I think it's a fine movie. Maybe at the beginning of the year, if I had seen it when it first came out, I might have had it in my top five. But now it's not even anywhere near my top 10. But it's still, I think a lot of people would appreciate it. I think that, like I said, the production quality and the set design and everything really spoke to the themes of the movie, but it's just, I don't think, enough by the end for it, everything to be earned. You know how I always talk about things being earned? I don't think anything is earned by the end of this movie.
Hermano, you're a big fan of the Vengeance trilogy. What do you think?
It's been about three weeks since I've seen the movie. I usually don't like to wait that long in between viewings to when we record. I've had a lot of time to think about it, and the more I thought about it, the more I actually really dug this movie. I have a theory on some of the nitpicks you guys have as far as believing that the spider was there just to be weird or just some kind of like quirky thing in the movie. I have a theory. I think it's subtle enough without being too on the nose.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Well,
I don't think I don't think there's much subtlety in this movie.
I think that spider, it's definitely walking a fine line. But I think it's subtle enough. I don't think it doesn't sound like you guys picked up on it. I picked up on something, especially it made more sense towards the end. So I can't really speak to it until we get into spoilers. But I really dug the movie. I thought it played similar to the way I viewed Hannah, which was like Hannah was like a fairy tale, pretty much like a real life fairy tale. The way it was directed, the way it was written, it made more sense as you watched it. There was a lot of imagery in the movie that lent itself to that. I thought this movie was similar, except like a dark fairy tale, like a much more, like you said, gothic and just twisted fantasy. I thought it was, I agree with some of the stuff that Tim complained about, where you don't really get to know her story other than she had a good relationship with her father and doesn't have one with her mother and really doesn't know what to make of her uncle.
But why doesn't she have a good relationship with her mother?
Exactly. It just seems like her mother's a little bit overbearing and maybe trying to change. You get a sense that she's trying to change who she is. She thinks she's very frumpy, very always wearing black.
I mean, at the beginning of the movie, when they show, you know, the events that, of people realizing that the father died, you see or you hear Nicole Kidman's character crying at the news, but then she seems very willing to move on.
Yeah.
You know, and like too willing to move on.
And that could speak to why India, that's her name, right, in the movie, doesn't have a good relationship with her mother. She just, I mean, she seemed like she was upset about it at first and then just kind of moves on very quickly. Like, you don't get the sense that she's mourning throughout the movie. You get the sense that she's moved on instantly.
Yeah, and I don't get the impression that the Uncle Charlie,
yeah,
did enough, you know, essentially to woo her.
I really liked everybody in the movie except for maybe Nicole Kidman. I thought that the way she delivered some of the lines, I don't know if it's the fault of the script or the way that she was playing the character, I felt like some of the lines she delivered just seemed really over the top at times and just not on the same level as the other characters, where they're playing kind of almost mute characters. Like, they're not very aggressive with their line readings and stuff like that. Like, they just seem very subtle and just kind of very soft-spoken. And I appreciated that. And then there's a line she recites, and it's been in the trailer, like, I can't wait to watch life tear you apart.
Yeah.
And just the way she reads it, it seemed a little corny. I don't know if it was the line. That is kind of a corny written line. But I think she could have read that in a different way.
Was it the death of her husband that awakened a repressed resentment against her daughter, or has she always been like that?
Well, she has that line where she talks about the reasons why you have children. And it seems like she comes from a fairly, like, she didn't really want to have kids, but like her husband did, so she reluctantly went along with this idea.
And was now that explained?
Yeah, there's a line. I forgot what the exact line is. She's like, this happens, and then you have children.
Yeah, but was it explained that she had children unwillingly, or a child?
It's implied by that line that she didn't really want to ever have kids.
Really, you got that?
That's
sense?
That's what I drew from that particular. I wish I could remember the line. I should have written it down.
I was a big fan of the direction. I felt like he definitely elevated this movie, because if I did have one nitpick, it probably would be the script. I felt overall the script wasn't terrible, but I thought it brought the movie down a little bit, where it could have been much better if it had a stronger script. I loved the camera movements, really odd camera movements in this movie. Like, almost like the camera's just like floating into rooms at times, like in really, really creative, like, use of transitions.
The one of the most talked about transitions of the year is the hair transition to the wheat field.
That was great.
It was fantastic. You know, I had heard it. I was expecting it going into it, and even expecting it, I was like, "Holy shit, that's amazing!"
Yeah, and like you said, the way some of the shots are shot and the way they're framed, I thought like he used like a lot of creative angles, like low angles, looking up at characters. At first I wasn't so hot in the movie. I kind of left it kind of. That was okay. I mean, I think I was expecting something a little better, but the more I thought about it, the more I started kind of thinking, like, what was this movie about, and kind of coming up with theories. And I have one specific theory that really speaks to why I think it's like I think it's pretty obvious, but like how it just plays out kind of like a fantasy, like a dark, twisted tale almost. Well, I'll have to wait till spoilers to get into that.
Was there anything else you guys wanted to mention before spoilers?
There's only like, we were talking about some of the direction. While I was watching the movie, one director jumped in my head that if it wasn't Chan Wook Park directing this, that I think would also make this movie pretty kick-ass. It's Tim Burton, but like old Tim Burton.
I guess, you know.
Like Sleepy Hollow, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Tim Burton, before he became like really commercialized.
Yeah, I don't know. I think this story deserves a more steady hand than even early Tim Burton.
Because it's got that weird kind of like... Well, I'm watching the movie, I'm kind of hearing like this plinky kind of organ, like harpsichord thing, you know, in the like kind of in the back of my mind while I'm watching. I'm like, this Tim Burton could have done this too. Certainly, I'm glad that it was you know, Chan Wook Park, because I think his directing style actually, like Romano says, elevates. It essentially saves this movie from being a complete F in my book.
Wow. Should we get into spoilers then?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, well, one more thing.
I thought there were some really, really like great scenes in the movie. Like the scene where she's playing the piano and her Uncle Charlie joins her.
Yes.
I mean, that scene was like straight out of something like Red Shoe Diaries. Like, it felt like very like erotic, but in a creepy way because of her age and him being his uncle. Also, I thought the I like how dark it got at times. Like the the boy that she goes on a date with.
Yeah.
Or and then also towards the end of the movie, like, you get a little backstory into Uncle Charlie and kind of you know, where his head is at and what he did in his past.
Yeah,
and,
but that kind of falls into the bad guy monologuing, you know?
You think so? I kind of bought
even,
into
even
that.
Though it's a flashback, he's explaining what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I would call it a monologue. Like, I mean, monologue seems to like cheapen it in my book. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not just like a, I don't know, like a bad movie element, like a
monologue. A James Bond villain.
Yeah, like a villain or something like that. Like
no, it's not that bad. I'm just saying that that's essentially what happens. So, and I always get a little bugged when in a more serious movie that happens, you know. I mean, I'll admit, in Prisoners, a movie that I really liked, of course, that happened at the end, and that's probably my biggest nitpick of that movie. But in this movie, it's just told in a different way. It's told via flashback, but then they flash forward a couple of times, and he's telling the story.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that bugged me a little bit. It's just like, what's the point? You know, if it's only to serve viewership service, mm-hmm. you know, viewer to explain exposition.
I didn't mind the exposition. I'm glad we got a little bit more backstory into his character. Other than that, you really don't know what his motives are, what he's after, exactly what he wants.
Right, but like I said before, things being earned, that thing that wasn't earned because I just wish it was told over time throughout the movie. You know, I wish we got a little more clues as the movie's going along instead of one huge clue at the end.
Okay, I can buy that.
Spoilers?
Spoiler time!
Okay, what specific did you guys want to talk about?
All right, that piano scene, I wanted to punch the TV.
Why?
I was like, we're going to just shoehorn this shit in for the entire movie. This is what I'm in for. Is this kind of crap?
What do you mean by that?
It's so forced. Like, oh, look, he's obviously going to be hitting on this young girl. Look, oh, he's making her come by playing the piano. Isn't that crazy and weird? Oh, my God, and that's so dark and scary. Fuck that.
No, of anything that was earned, I thought that was earned. I thought that was placed.
Like, this is just thrown in there.
Also, the way that plays out is when she actually looks up, he's not there. It's all in her head.
I don't know about that. I think she could have been so enraptured by it that
he had time to sneak away.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I don't know. I kind of took that as like he wasn't actually there and she was fantasizing.
Yeah, I'm with Tim on that one. That he's basically testing the waters to see where he can go.
Well,
with this.
There you go. You like to take the very literal with most things, and I can see, honestly, I can see it going either way. You know, I didn't even think that it could have been in her head until Hermano mentioned it.
Yeah, I know there are times in the movie where he does kind of seem to slink in and out of scenes like very quietly, and he just happens to be there when someone looks over. But that was one of those scenes where I felt like that was in her head. That was like a fantasy.
So one of the more effective scenes I thought was the boy that she goes out with in the woods. You know, her uncle comes and eventually breaks his neck.
Yeah,
that was a very well framed, well shot, and well
it lingered.
And the sound design on that part was very, very good, very effective.
Yeah.
Right, that, yeah, just his that character's appearance, like suddenly.
Oh well, yeah, okay. No, I agree with you that how did Charlie know that she would be there? How did he follow her?
Even the date itself is all out of left field. It's like, hi.
No, I don't know. I kind
of she's paid no attention to him the entire movie. All of a sudden, now she's on a date with him.
No, she was slightly intrigued.
And plus, that was after the piano scene.
That is after the piano scene.
She was a little hot and bothered.
It's also after the hand stabbing scene.
No, but
he's the one that comes to her aid.
Yeah.
He's sitting on that. She ends up sitting on that. He calls the other guy off from trying to fight him. When he does take a swing at her, she still stabs him in the hand. Like, those two scenes precede this, and it just seems out of left field. Like, let's go on a date.
But the person who got his hand stabbed is not that same person.
Not the same person, but they're part of that same. He's in that same clique.
No, he's not.
No, he's not.
He's the one that
he comes to the rescue and tells the other guys to get lost.
Yeah. Exactly.
He's the guy that sits down and is like, why don't you guys take off or whatever.
And he's actually nice to her.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I still got the feeling he's part of that same that
No,
same
not
group,
at all.
Because he ends up taking the chair that they're all sitting on.
So? He's just claiming his dominance.
Yeah, like a leader of that clique.
But he's not a leader. They obviously have no connection to him whatsoever.
I don't know.
And also, I thought that she saw him as someone like her, where he's kind of like this guy who runs alone and doesn't have. He's not running in a pack with a bunch of other like jock guys.
Right. He remember the only two friends that they show is the other bikers from that bar.
So he's Dylan from 90210 then.
Whatever, but he's not part of that original clique that we saw. He's on his own with these other bikers, essentially.
They need to establish more of that.
I think of anything that was fine. You know, that wasn't anything that I needed more explanation of.
Okay. Do you guys want to hear my spider, why the spider is in this movie?
Oh, yeah. Why is the spider in the movie?
Okay. I've heard this movie described as like a sexual awakening or like a coming of age
agreed
movie for her. I don't agree with that. I think in a sense it kind of is a coming of age, but to say it's a coming of age means that she was somehow not in control or and became an adult or became someone that, you know, could stand on her own or take care of herself. I think from minute one of this movie, she's completely in control, and that's where the spider comes in. She's like a spider. She's hunting. Like, she's never not in control in this movie to me. Like, she, especially the way it ends, like, she's totally ready for Uncle Charlie to pull something. Like, she's not, like, caught off guard. Like, she was ready. And the whole spider thing is just the way a spider waits it out with a fly. It doesn't eat the fly right away. It wraps it up, walks away.
So she was playing Charlie later. She was playing Charlie, essentially.
Pretty much. Like, she's never not in control. She's not this young girl who can't handle the situation she's in. She's completely competent, and you get that from the flashbacks with her dad. Like, like you get the sense that her dad and her, like, they went out shooting.
Yeah.
Like, she's not like just like a girl who's into playing with dolls. Like, she can shoot a fucking sniper rifle.
Sure.
Like, she's trained. Like, she's not like...
No, I get that. I get that she was trained to handle a gun, but I don't get how that there was anything roiling inside of her that was ready to come out. And essentially, that's what this movie is it's an awakening that her confrontations with her Uncle Charlie is what leads to that monster essentially coming out. And I never got the sense that there was a monster roiling inside of her, because at the end of this movie she becomes a killer. She becomes a murderer.
Yeah.
She murders Charlie basically out of self defense or preservation for her mother. But then she goes and kills that cop. Why does she kill that cop?
Because he's the only one that can tie her to the murder of the biker boy.
I don't know if they had enough on that.
That's another scene that I think lends itself to my assessment of the movie. Like, She is not shocked by anything that happens in this movie. When that kid gets his neck snapped, she's fine. Like, she takes a shower and then she's fine. You know, like,
well, she takes a shower and she masturbates.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, she's never. I mean, you see little snippets of scenes where, like, you see a little bit of the monster inside of her coming out. Like, when she stabs that kid with the pencil in his knuckle, and you know what I mean. Like, there's little bits and pieces you get until finally it's completely revealed.
But this is what I mean when I wish that we got a little bit more backstory before exactly, she meets her uncle, and that there was something there. Mm-hmm. Just a little bit of something.
Yeah.
You know, even in those flashbacks when they flashback to with her and her father shooting that bird, you know, I didn't get that sense that she got some sort of relief out of shooting that bird.
There's a line from the movie that actually says that blatantly.
What?
She said, in Hermano's case, there's a line where she says, the best prey doesn't know that it's prey until the moment you strike.
Exactly.
There's that. And then there's a part where she's relating a story about her father who said, sometimes you have to do bad things to keep worse things from happening. So he knows already that she's going to be a killer. And so he takes her hunting so that she can release that ability to kill.
You think he knew that?
In nature. Yeah, he knows that.
Wow, I totally did not see that.
He knows that she has a tendency to want to haunt things.
She's Dexter is what she is, and that he's the
you don't get a sense that she was completely in control the whole time, like that she was just playing her Uncle Charlie, even though the whole movie you think that it's him that's the predator, when in actuality she turns the tables on him. And
no,
she's
I never got that by the end.
I got that completely by the end, especially by the end. It made complete sense to me. Like, I just felt like the whole time she was the one playing him.
And I was gonna have the complaint department too, is that the whole reveal of the sunglasses thing that comes out of left field, that drove me absolutely batshit.
Now remind me what that scene was. I don't remember.
She goes when her uncle and her mom are out driving around. She goes through his bag and finds a pair of sunglasses, And then at the very end, when she confronts him, she's like, "Those are my dad's sunglasses, and he only kept them in the car. They would have burned up if the car exploded."
Yeah.
There's no cue for any of this. It's just like, what a twist! I'm just waiting for M. Night Shyamalan to come walking in.
Yeah, I almost get the sense that was like her Sherlock moment, where she just put two and two together.
Yeah,
I can sort of buy that in her character, where she's.
But yeah, but as the audience, for the audience, there's no other cue in. And I'm trying to think. I think you might actually see, like, in a flashback, her dad wearing the sunglasses while they're hunting, like, on top of his head.
Yeah.
But it's not enough of a draw to be like, my dad only kept these in the car so that you know, he could drive with them. So if you're wearing them, obviously you took them out of the car if the car exploded.
Unless she knows that he had them on him when he went to pick up.
Yeah, but the thing is that there's no cue for that. It just comes out of nowhere.
Now, what did you guys think of the whole reveal of Uncle Charlie and his whole backstory?
I saw that coming a mile away.
I kind of guessed that there was something like that. But, I mean, the fact that he, as a child, he murdered his younger brother. And
by burying him alive.
Yeah, I know. That's pretty brutal. And that, see, the thing is, I guess by the end of this movie, they try to establish that maybe it's like a hereditary thing that's in the family. Maybe it skips certain generations. Maybe it skips certain people in the family. But it's something within the family. And I don't, it's another thing that I don't think was earned. I don't think that I got the sense that, oh, you know, that this is something that she is suspect to and that is ready to come out. And, excuse me. And having the, you know, the backstory of you know, him, Charlie being in like an asylum or a psychiatric ward or something like that. I don't know. It was just.
I think it makes sense. I mean, like, if the father knew that his brother had a mental illness that caused him to want to hurt people, and he saw signs of it in his daughter, it leads me to believe it might have been hereditary. So I mean, that I think that's why he would take her shooting, to kind of give her that release. That she saw, that urge to want to kill or hurt things, which really comes through in the end of the movie when you see exactly how far she'll go to conceal what's, happened, before that. So I really dug the movie. I mean.
Yeah, no, I can see where you come across. I just don't think that there was. I just don't think there was enough for me to be able to gather all that. I'm glad you were able to see it. For some reason, some of that stuff either just went over my head or I just didn't grasp.
Yeah, there was a point that Mia brought up, because the movie pretty much tells you that Uncle Charlie has been in this psychiatric ward or this mental hospital since he was a child. So Mia made me laugh. Like, instantly she's like, wait a minute. So if he's been there since he was a child, how the hell does he know how to drive? And I was like, well, there was a little line I think she might have missed. I almost missed it, where he was pretty much staying there of his own volition. He wanted to. He could pretty much go whenever he wanted. It didn't seem like a
very restrictive.
He had like his own apartment with like full of books.
Yeah,
I guess.
And he could have gone out in any time and gotten his driver's license. So I mean, I kind of explained that, but it made me laugh nonetheless. It was kind of funny.
Yeah. Is there anything else you guys want to mention?
No, I think I've pretty much covered everything that I wanted to say.
Pretty much.
Okay, so we asked Twitter for their reaction, and surprisingly, we only got like four responses. I had to tweet this out.
Like, come on, has nobody seen Stoker?
I know. I'm really surprised, because I could have sworn that at the beginning of the year that a ton of people talked about this movie. But I like I said, I only got four responses. So Aaron Moran at Aaron Moran at AA Moran 101. A dark, twisted coming-of-age story which borrows from Hitchcock in the very best way. Absolutely fantastic. I think Wally might have some issues with that.
Nope.
Cody McDougal at Swizzle Malarkey.
I love Twitter handles.
It's in my top 10 so far. Love the twisted coming-of-age twist. So sick of awkward 15-year-old boy coming-of-age flicks. Now, I can understand that. I can appreciate this as a alternate coming of age story, awakening story. I appreciate the effort in there, Neil Ramsey at Neil Ramsey. Great eerie tension throughout, created by Park Chan-wook. Kidman perfectly cast as plastic mother. Mia a bit frail and disjointed. I might switch that.
I would switch that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that Nicole Kidman was disjointed. I just felt like Mia Wachowskis. Sorry. I felt like her performance definitely worked for me more than Nicole Kidman's did.
I agree. Well, Wally, did any of the performances work for you?
No, because it felt so forced. Like oh, we have a guy who just doesn't show any emotion, and like the weird kind of like child girl, you know, running around, climbing trees, skipping through the
this
woods.
This is very interesting because of all the things that you appreciated the most out of this movie, it's a director that you really don't even care for that much.
Yeah.
You know, you appreciate his directing more so than anything else.
I appreciated the visual style of this. Like, like the shot choices and like the way it's composed. I like that really saved this movie.
And the music and the score, I think, is excellent.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
And the sound design, I wanted to punch somebody in the face for the story though.
Ryan B at the Chew Defense, best movie of 2013 so far. Park was able to make a Park Chan-wook movie just in English, and it fucking worked. Well, that's pretty high praise.
I'm right there with you, buddy.
You think is it your favorite movie of the year so far?
Not my favorite movie of the year, but I think it's in my top three.
Wow, that's
bold.
So should we get into grades? I'll start with Wally.
D plus.
I would give it a B.
I'm about to stab Wally with a pencil in the knuckle.
I ain't throwing punches at you.
A minus, baby.
A minus, B, and D plus sounds like a B minus average. Okay.
You son of a bitch.
Okay, that does it for this episode of the First Time Watchers podcast. You can find us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. We post movie news and updates that we think you would be interested in. And you can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com.
You can talk to us on Twitter at 1sttimewatchers@twitter.com.
Or follow us on our Tumblr page, firsttimewatchers.tumblr.com.
Please download our episodes on iTunes and feel free to leave a review. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you have any suggestions of movies for us to watch, please send a tweet, an email, or post on our Facebook page. And stay tuned for our next episode. We will be starting our scary movie theme for the month of October.
Spooky!
With Night of the Creeps. And that is only the beginning of October. We have other movies like Reanimator, The Loved Ones, The Devil's Backbone, a listener suggestion, The Devil's Backbone. And we're going to mix in Gravity, too, which should be scary on its own.
Spooky!
That's the First Time Watchers podcast because we like to watch.
Witness it.
Wally, I'm already getting preemptively mad at you.
For what?
For something that you probably are. Now, I'm thinking you're not going to do it, but now that I'm mentioning it, you're probably going to do it.
Most
just
likely.
To piss me off.
What is it?
In 4 weeks is the finale to Breaking Bad.
Yep.
And you have yet to see a single episode.
Not a thing.
And you're probably going to watch the final episode.
You better.
And you're
going
to be like, holy shit, I need to go see this now. And I'm going to be so fucking pissed at you. Because what you see and your reaction to it will not be earned at all. Exactly like your reaction to the second to last episode of season 3 of Game of Thrones.
Well, see, my reaction to that was not like, holy shit, this is the best thing. I was like, what the... How did we get to this point?
Yeah, but no, that's... That in and of itself made me so upset that you did that because you cheated yourself.
I didn't cheat myself
in. Yes, you did. You cheated yourself of actually watching it and having that moment earned for you. And not be like... oh wow, this is weird. How, just like you said, how did we get to this? See, your
see,
reaction
now,
would
when
be
I go back
no,
and watch your, those
no,
other
no, no,
episodes.
no. Your reaction would be completely different if you saw it genuinely for the first time after seeing the previous episodes.
I don't know. I mean, like, so
no,
watch,
no,
I go
no
back
okay.
And watch.
Here we go. Do you go and like when you get a new comic book or a book? Do you go and read the last page, the last paragraph,
no.
the last chapter?
No.
Why
well,
not?
Actually, no, I do with Blade of the Immortal. I take a look at the last page every single time.
Of this, one specific one?
One specific title.
Okay,
I
but
know
no,
where
I'm talking about
with
everything that's new to you.
I want
to
know
do that.
What to expect at the end of this book. And,
but
like,
do you
how
do
I get
that
there.
With every single thing that's new to you? With a new book? Anything. Do you go to... Do you get a DVD in the mail? Do you go to the last chapter and watch the last 5 minutes and then go back and watch the...
No, but I have watched movies on fast forward.
No, that's not the same thing. You're trying to rationalize this, and it doesn't make any sense, and it pisses me off, and you're going
to
do it with Breaking Bad.
It makes perfect sense to me.
I'll punch you in the face.
It makes perfect. All you hear on the podcast is, ow! Motherfucker, you hit me!
I told you I would.
So now this is the record that Tim is going to assault Wally on the show if he watches Breaking Bad. Just want to clarify my little my legal comeuppance here, just in case that happens.
Yeah. Well, I mean, seriously, I mean,
I don't know. I'm never home when it's on, so yeah, it's not like I'm ever going to catch it. And you know, no one I know really watches it anyway. So, I mean, the other people in the house watch, you know, Game of Thrones. I'm like, oh, I'll watch this. I'm like, well, this seems a little crazy.
Well, still, until a month from now, I'm going to be still preemptively mad at you.
Preemptively mad at me?
Yes.
So you're going to be like Phoebe on Friends.
Well,
when she's mad at Ross the entire day because something she dreamt.
Oh, yeah, no, that's exactly. And she doesn't know why.
And she doesn't know why.
Yeah.
She's like, I dreamt that I'm mad at you. But you're mad at me because you dreamt that you were mad at me?
That's a good one.